Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 394 for comics originally released on February 25th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Effigy number 2. This is from Vertigo. Creative team here is Tim Seeley and Marley Zarcone. This is one, Drew, that you had recommended and was not something I had pre-ordered. But they had previews of the first issue in, I guess, the back of other Vertigo things, because I'd seen a couple of pages from it. And that was enough to make me say, you know, maybe I should check this out. So I read the two issues kind of back to back. You're reading a monthly or?
Yeah.
Okay. I just got the second issue and just finished that. But yeah, I was really impressed with the debut. So yeah, it was a fun surprise.
Yeah, I'm glad you recommended this. While I think the creators have a little bit of a bleak view on child stars, and the I guess inherent trauma their lives must turn into, by and large, this is a really good read. It's a lot of fun. I mean, we're two issues in, and it's essentially a buddy cop drama kind of a thing. The twist being you've got an actual real police officer, and you've got just a neophyte one that used to play a space cop on TV, who's just, you know, writing, you know, parking tickets or whatnot these days, traffic violations, I guess, and gets sucked into an actual murder crime or whatever. And the police investigation part of this, on the one hand, is kind of moving glacially slow, but on the other hand, we're getting enough about the characters, the interplay between them, the backstory and stuff like that. I don't mind at all how quick or slow the police part of it goes. I mean, this is something that they do enough flashbacks and just kind of getting us to know, you know, what is it, Chandra Jackson, the one who was on Star Cops, what her past was like, how she grew up. They occasionally intercut kind of the reality TV, you know, interview scenes or whatnot, which is actually kind of fun. It's something that 9 times out of 10, I don't know would have worked for me, but here it plays well. And it also means that the lead, Chandra Jackson, is not going to die because she's doing this presumably after the fact. But, you know, hey, I'm okay with that. The way it's going, if this is a limited series. Is this a limited series or ongoing, actually?
It doesn't say it's limited, but you never know with Vertigo.
Yeah. It seems like even after this one story is over, I'd like to see it continue with these characters, or at least a number of them. They're telling a compelling story. There's a lot of questions I've got about, you know, what's going on with the Influence Center or whatever it was, and a few things like that. So there's a lot of things that are still left to be explained, described, and fleshed out. But it's also having gone from, you know, a complete blank slate to a fairly interesting world with the characters we've already gotten to know. It's fun, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, if this sounds good as we go through this review, and you go back and grab issue one, the beginning pages of issue one, if you're not prepared for them, are a real turnoff, because they're basically reliving her television show, her kids show that she was on. And if you hadn't paid attention to the solicit, like I didn't really pay that much attention to the solicit, you didn't know that, and you just thought you got the cheesiest all ages book ever. And I was about 4 pages in, and I thought, well, Tim Seeley's just going off the rails, and I'm not going to waste my time, and I'm getting ready to put this down. And then you realize, those of you who have read the solicit or stick with it,
or stayed after the fourth page or whatever, yeah,
stayed after the fourth or fifth page, that it's way more than that, and that is just set up for who our main character is. And so when you just know that going into issue one, because I did not, and it was a bit of a surprise. Another cool thing about this is, you know, the setting is very close to my house. It's at the Serpent Mound in Ohio, which is Native American burial grounds.
So it's a real place.
It's a real place. And and so that's kind of a cool bonus points for me because of that. And, you know, you don't get a lot of Ohio set and Ohio-based comics. So I thought that was kind of cool. And the art's really cool, and the storytelling is great, and it's a fun procedural. I really these first two issues have been really solid, and I'm glad you kind of like them too.
It's something that I think has some definite substance to it, and I couldn't help but, as certainly by the time I got to the second issue, thinking, you know, if this were a TV show or movie, who would be cast in it? Because it reads really well, and I think it lends itself to like a live action kind of a thing. And it's one of the few spins on a cop drama that I don't think I've really seen on TV. You know, the former child star, you know, gets pulled into, I mean, it's similar to, you know, the premise of Castle and a few things. You've got the established cop pull in some, you know, entertainment type person, but it's sufficiently different. Yeah,
it is unique because she's a child television star and he grew up without a TV. So I think that, I thought that was kind of cool, that pairing.
Yeah.
And that dynamic works off. They work well together. I don't know if he's just lying about that, but
yeah. I am wondering about that, because there are a couple of times it almost seems like he's definitely, you know, the other cop is just yanking her chain.
Yeah, exactly. The best friend characters, you know, kind of a strange one. The childhood best friend.
Yeah.
Who was really, really infatuated with our main character. And then there was a beat in issue one at the end with this character that was a different character that's in a different setting and part of some conspiracy or overarching mystery. And so that one was kind of that little element was strange. But there's, you know, besides these couple little offbeat things that are in here, it's pretty standard crime drama, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes and no. I mean, this issue ends on a one-page note where it's like clearly there's more going on.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm hoping that ties back to the final pages of the last issue as well. Maybe they're connected in some way.
Yeah, I mean, it's legitimately what you would expect out of a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
But it's also got enough of what you would expect out of your standard TV police procedural to be fun on those grounds. And then you've got the whole, you know, former child star Hollywood aspect that brings a unique flavor to it. So, I mean, it's definitely a mashup of different genres, different concepts that I think are very accessible to everybody. And no one kind of overpowers the others. It's a very interesting blend of them. And this was something that the solicit, frankly, isn't bad, but I don't think it did it well. Because, I mean, the concept is, I don't want to say standard fare or what you would expect, but it's not something that just jumps off the page to me saying, wow, this is a brilliant concept. What's brilliant here is the execution. They did a really smooth job delivering what they set out to do, or at least what they led me to believe they were setting out to do. There are a few things here where it's clear this is a big story they're potentially telling. There's a lot of mystery. There's, again, a lot of things left to unfold, and that's cool. But I also feel that we're getting a substantial amount of story per issue that I feel very satisfied. And they're walking that line really well. It's not done in one, but it's not, you know, an insubstantial chapter of an ongoing story either. So it's, again, a lot of fun. For me, this was a very solid B, and has the potential of certainly getting up into that A rating over time. So I'm glad you recommended it. This is one that, again, I had seen the solicit and passed on, and that was a mistake.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, and I gave it the A minus, and so I was really enjoyed this second issue and felt it really continued that story well and moved the story forward. Something that isn't unique to Vertigo books or is sticking the title pages at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I find that so annoying, and I don't know why they do that. Why is it a recent phenomenon that this has happened? Like in the last couple of years that they've started throwing the title pages at the end instead of at the beginning?
I'll be honest, I don't read enough Vertigo books to know how consistent they are on that kind of a thing or not. I haven't really paid attention. I'm getting, you know, this Unwritten Fables, was getting Ferris and stuff. So I'm only getting a handful of Vertigo books, which is a small percentage of what I read overall.
Well, I'm thinking in my 20 to 30 books a week that I'm reading,
mm-hmm.
maybe five or six throw the title page at the end.
It does
across publishers.
Yeah, it does seem to be happening a bit more and more. I've got mixed feelings. On the one hand, it's kind of nice because at the end, if I'm thinking, wow, I liked it, who did it? Boom, it's right there. On the other hand, it kind of makes sense to get the title of the story and things like that at the beginning. So I don't have really strong views on it either way. But I kind of like it better where it's either at the beginning, you know, I can see opening page, flip to a two-page splash, put it there, not a problem, or have it at the end. But when it's buried somewhere randomly, almost in the middle of the book,
that's crazy annoying. I hate that. That's my least favorite.
Because then I'm flipping through. It's like, well, who did this? I don't know. And then I get to where I don't care. You know, and that's not a good thing for the creators.
Right.
So, yeah, this was fun. Glad we read this one.
But the title of this arc is called Meet Cute, which is kind of rooted in television and is kind of a story beat that often happens in sitcoms and romantic comedies and things like that.
I did not know that.
Where the two main characters, you know, meet cute and meet in a cute way. And so I thought that was a clever title for the first story arc as well.
That was totally lost on me, to be honest. And I've actually got a degree in radio, television, film. I guess, you know, from long enough ago that these things didn't exist.
It's probably a modern phrase. It's probably a more modern phrase for romantic comedy. I didn't go to college
in the Paleolithic era. Jeez.
No, I mean, I think it's a recent coining. Like, you know how the word writer's room is kind of superfluous now and everybody throws the word writer's room around cold open. And, you know, they use these terms that used to be industry terms, like they're in the business or something. You hear them a lot more now than they used to.
Well, totally, totally. And I think as an audience, we've gotten well trained in these things. We get the concept of the cold open, the, you know, in the middle of the action, that kind of stuff. And I think it influences how we read certain stories, sometimes for the better, sometimes not so much, you know? But yes, that was a term that was lost on me. So thank you.
So A minus for me.
Cool. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Spider-Gwen number one. This is spinning out of the Spider-Verse storyline. Jason Latour is the writer. Robbie Rodriguez is the artist. This character apparently has gotten, you know, crazy popular given the incredibly few appearances she's actually had. It's really Edge of Spider-Verse and Spider-Verse, and that's about it. And we've read Silk. We've read the first issue of Spider-Woman. In the past, I've read, you know, Ariana, the various Spider-Girl titles, etc. So there are a lot of female Spider characters to compare this one to. And if you can find one where this compares positively, I would like you to state that now, because I'll be honest, I was disappointed with this. And I think the character is interesting, but I came out of this thinking she's more interesting in a Spider-Verse event opposite Peter Parker's. And just on her own, this version of Gwen Stacy, there's nothing wrong with her, but I was unimpressed. What did I miss here that you found that you loved, or do you agree?
I can see you saying that it wasn't as good. It wasn't as strong as Silk. Mm-hmm. I don't feel it was as strong as that debut. I do think it was much better than the Spider-Woman issue that we also reviewed. So it's right there in the middle, a little closer to Silk, I think, than the Spider-Woman for me. I kind of thought the character worked a little better as it progressed. I mean, at first I didn't really get her cadence and the way she talked, but it worked for me as it went on. But yeah, it does. It feels a little derivative, and because of that, you know, and we've seen so many variations on the Spider-Man character, and I'm reading a ton of them now, and we just finished an event where there was a ton more of variations of Spider-Man. It's really tough, I think, to rise above the chatter, right?
Well, and I think that was a lot of it for me. There's nothing wrong with this character. There's nothing even particularly wrong with this issue, but there's so much Spider characters going around, so many female ones right now, that it lacks uniqueness just on those grounds, and there was nothing to really make it stand out from that. And there were enough aspects of this story where it's, hey, look, here's a character you're familiar with from the classic, you know, Marvel Universe, but they're in a slightly different role or position or a different take on them.
Yeah, now that was interesting to see Foggy and Matt Murdock and a couple other characters in there. Yeah, I thought that was cool. And that there's room to grow there and room to explore. There wasn't a lot of time there, though. And you didn't get a lot of bang for your buck. You just got kind of a glimpse at what could be.
Well, and it's like, hey, this is a character you're familiar with, different role, but I didn't think the way they were used was particularly clever, interesting, or had any real, you know, pizzazz or meat to it.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that would differ from an Ultimate Universe version of those characters.
Yeah. Well, it's another take on, you know, a few of these things, a few of these characters or whatnot, but nothing to hang my hat on. It raised more questions for me because it implies she may be like the only superhero in this world, potentially, because we know certain people are not, from what we've seen here. And again, nothing right or wrong about that, but is that going to be one of the main aspects of this series of let's explore this world? And that can be cool. I loved Mutant X when they did that. I loved Exiles when they did that. I'm fine with different takes on the characters, but if it's just, hey, here's a familiar name, and that's about all I felt we got, that was disappointing.
Yeah, it's very much a beginning chapter and very introductory to the world. And, and yeah, there's not a lot of meat on the bone. There's just some kernels of stuff that could be interesting. I think you spend enough time with Gwen herself to get a sense of who she is. The stuff with the all-girl band, I guess we got some of that. We touched on some of that in her Edge of Spider-Verse story, I think.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember a lot of the details. So I don't remember if the band was together then, and they're not, because they're not now.
I think she quit the band then.
During that issue.
But again, it's been long enough since I've read that Edge of Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a key enough aspect of that issue for me to say, oh yeah, I remember. And I guess that's part of what I'm struggling with here is, again, this isn't bad, but it's just another story. It's just another, you know, alternate reality or whatever. And it wasn't something where that Edge of Spider-Verse issue was so engaging that I'm thinking, wow, I've got to read more. I can't wait to figure out what happens with this plot thread or that plot thread. I have vague recollections of what the plot threads from that even were.
Yeah.
And this, I think, carried on from it fine, but it just, yeah, I don't know, it left me a little, it felt a little, bland's not the right word, but kind of pedestrian, a little, just kind of average.
I think it's a little better than that, but I have some concerns that I don't know if the industry, readership, fans can support, you know, we've got Spider-Man 2099. We've got Miles Morales Spider-Man. We've got our main Spider-Man and whatever ancillary, secondary and third titles that he'll crank out. And then we're going to have Spider-Woman. We're going to have Silk, and now we're going to have Spider-Gwen. I think there's going to be some spider fatigue, and I'm not sure who's going to be on the losing end of that. I don't know how many of those can be supported. And I think this has a shot because it's out of the 616 a little bit more than the other two female spider characters are. And so it can kind of, it's a little bigger world. It can kind of explore and stretch its legs a little bit. And I'm kind of interested in seeing it do that a little more than maybe I was pretty underwhelmed with the Spider-Woman series so far. I am going to, of course, give that a chance when they release the new version of it, I think in issue 5, but
yeah, I think the next one is where she gets the new costume, does more of the super spy stuff. It's almost as that if that's kind of the real first issue and the rest was just the ancillary to Spider-Verse stuff.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm hopeful that picks up. But yeah, so I'm concerned that there's not enough readers to go around for all these spider titles.
Well, and maybe that's what I'm suffering from is a little spider fatigue, particularly right on the heels of Spider-Verse.
Yeah, Spider-Verse really drained us because there was a lot of titles.
Well, and she worked a lot better in that venue where you've got Peter Parker, particularly the 616, you know, just worried about her because, well, in his world, she died. And here, that drama, that whole, you know, she's an equal, needs to be taken as such. I mean, that's just not part of the story. So I think they took some of the dramatic meat and took it away. This character, I think, would have worked better in maybe that Secret Wars Spider-Verse title they've announced, where they're getting, again, you know, half a dozen spider characters together. I think she would have been great there. Again, I don't think this was bad, but it just, It wasn't brilliant, and I think new comics these days really kind of need that. For me, I gave this a C+. I think it's got potential, but I don't think it realized much of that here. It did cover some good ground in terms of her status quo, what's going on. But I think if you hadn't read Spider-Verse, you came to this cold, I don't think there's enough here to get somebody really hooked on Spider-Gwen. But, you know, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I'm not that far away from you. I'm at a B-, and, you know, I think Jason Latour's got some interesting ideas in here. And the art by Robbie Rodriguez is pretty good, so there's nothing really wrong with the art at all. And I'm just curious to see where it goes, especially in exploring the world. And I think the character is likable. So there's something here, and something to check out, and I'm going to stick around.
I mean, I hear you on those things, particularly the exploring the world. I just didn't think they did anything to make this world so interesting to explore in this issue. And again, first issue, give them the opening arc. Let's see where they go. Maybe it'll pan out once they have some, you know, time to do all that. But so far, that part, which would have been enough to bump up my rating or something like that, we haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah, I think there's you know, the version of Matt Murdock that we get a glimpse of. You know, we get to see Foggy in a different role. We get to see you know, we hear of J. Jonah Jameson, and mm-hmm. and we see the relationship with her dad a little bit. So I thought there was a lot of stuff, that a lot of breadcrumbs there. But like you said, yeah, they didn't give us too much of that, just a little bit. But I liked what I saw.
The Murdock, that part I liked. That was one of the highlights of the issue for me, actually. Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Orphan Black number 1. This is obviously related to the TV show of the same name. It is written by Graham Mason and John Fawcett with Jody Hauser. Graham and John, those two are the, I believe, co-creators and main writers of the TV show, so that's a good sign. Jody Hauser is the one, I believe, helping them adapt this into comic book format. We've got Simon Kudransky on the art. I think he does a good job on the art. Have you followed the TV show?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through season 1.
Okay, all right. So you watched those recently?
Within 6 months, and I recognize them right here on the pages.
The reason I was asking how recently you've done it is so much of this, you know, particularly once we get past kind of that first page or two, this thing starts off right where the series started.
Yeah, it's pretty much a verbatim interpretation, I think, of the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, it's one that didn't... It seemed like it added a little bit here, changed a little here, looked at different perspectives or whatever. So I wouldn't say it's a literal adaptation of the series.
No, I don't think it did as good a job as the television show did. But it would almost... Here's a scene you'll it was presented in such a way like, here's a scene you'll remember from the show, and we're gonna tell you that scene and that story beat in two panels,
mm-hmm.
and then move on to another scene that you may recognize from the show and tell you that in two panels, and very quickly move through those first few episodes of the season that way. And so I think if you it was tough for me to put myself in the shoes of someone who hasn't seen the show. But when I try to do that, I would think that it would not tell the story very well at all. If you hadn't seen the show.
If you haven't seen the show, watch the show. I'm not going to say don't get this, although I was about to. To me, this is covering enough of the same ground as the show, with a few, like I said, new things sprinkled in. But like you said, it was almost like a slideshow recap. And if I could see somebody maybe checking this out if they're familiar with the concept of Orphan Black but haven't watched the series, but those people really ought to go watch the series and not try to get the story through this comic, because while it's in the continuity, with the TV series, you get to see Tatiana Maslany playing the multiple roles, and she just does a brilliant job at that.
Right, and that's the draw. That's the key to the show for me is that actress. And you don't really get that sense here. I couldn't recommend this to anyone who hasn't seen the show. I would think you would have to be a fan of the show. And then it's really not written for folks that like the show either, because there's not a lot of new material here. It's just a rehash.
It seemed like there were a few things because they had thought balloons and some stuff like that they could do that put a little different spin on some stuff. We got some flashback and backstory on Sarah here that we hadn't gotten in the TV show.
That's true. That's true. There was those flashbacks were to her childhood and as an orphan, that backstory, almost issue zero type of stuff. You're right. That stuff has some relevance for fans of the show.
You know, it doesn't seem like it's enough to make this kind of worth it in and of itself.
Right.
And next issue, I think we get a different one of the characters, a different one of the clones and stuff, which, you know, maybe since, you know, Sarah here is the star of the show, maybe with some of the others that we've seen less of, we get more new material. But this is one of those where I really think it was a swing and a miss. I mean, they've got some stuff here that's cool, some stuff that's good, but the show is so well done that the writing here felt... I don't know that any of the people working on the writing on this are really familiar with the comic book format and how best to leverage that. I guess Jody Hauser has done some stuff on some web comics and maybe a few things. I guess she did some stuff in the Avengers No More Bullying from a couple of weeks back and some stuff in one of the quarterlies from Vertigo.
Yeah, the Magenta issue.
Yeah, but nothing that seems like a really long ongoing kind of a deal to work out, kind of to get comfortable in the format.
Yeah, a lot of the panels just felt like, you know, storyboard images, you know, from a bulletin board or something. And, you know, that maybe you would use to this is what the scene's about that we need to go film. And they kind of translated it to comic book form that way, because there was a lot of stuff that was, you know, it was really well done in the show and really well performed, and got a couple panels and moved on. And I thought that was just, anybody who hasn't seen the show is not going to get the same gratification out of that. Out
not
of the
even
story
close.
Beat.
Yeah.
Besides the stuff with the orphanage and the foster family backstory, there's really nothing else here for anybody else that's just a fan of the show that wants more. So yeah, it's really a swing and a miss on a couple of fronts. And as a first issue, really, it didn't work that well.
I'm almost wondering how much of this issue, obviously not the flashback scenes of the little bit of new material we got, but how much of this, other than that, could be edited together from that first season, just as an extended previously on kind of a deal, and what percentage of this issue that would have covered. You know, I like that it's so tight with the continuity and whatnot. That's awesome. But it's not really giving me any new insights onto this character. It's not really expanding my knowledge of the world or doing something they couldn't do and frankly hadn't already done on the TV show for the most part. And this is something where, you know, if they had used this to give us background on some other characters that we hadn't seen or a backstory on some of the things that led up to all of this, or, you know, I mean, there are multiple ways they could have done this that would have really added to the Orphan Black overall story, versus here it felt like you said, that we just got the snapshots and the retelling of aspects of it, just the memory jog, if you will, and did it in a way that I think kind of leeches some of the power out of those scenes.
I mean, I think there are also some art problems here with the character evolves and changes a little bit, there's not a lot of consistency there with our main character, I don't think, and the art is just kind of blasé too. It's not really that great, and it does feel like there's some posed, non-natural renderings of characters too that felt a little awkward. So that even the art can't really save it here. So all that being said, I had to give it a D.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm going to go with a C minus. I don't think I'm much above you on that, but I appreciate what they're trying to do here. But this is not something that I think I could hand to somebody and say, here, you know, I know you haven't watched Orphan Black, but check this out. I think you'll like it. Or worse, I don't think it's something I could hand to somebody who really likes Orphan Black and say, this is worth reading. And that really disappoints me.
Yeah. And I mean, the scene after she kind of checks in on her own funeral there and the girl gets in the back seat, the art isn't even close enough, I don't think, for you as a reader to put it together that they look that much alike. I don't think there's enough similarity there for the reader to put that together until they spell it out for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and this is the kind of thing where having an artist that can really do those kinds of likenesses yet make the character different enough, and that's asking a lot out of an artist, much like it is out of an actress. But Tatiana Maslany really delivers on that.
Yeah, maybe I'm spoiled by the performances from the show and how nuanced they are and how well they work.
The body language changes, the mannerisms. I mean, she's not only doing the multiple different roles, but throughout the series at times, one of the characters is impersonating one of the other characters. So you see that kind of double take on the characters. And it's fascinating, just from a acting point of view. And any comic book rendition of this was automatically not going to have that. So that gives it a bit of a handicap. And the writing didn't make up for that. The art didn't make up for that. It was disappointing. Yeah. So I'm glad we checked it out. I'm going to keep going with the other ones. I am hopeful that future issues covering other clones that we've seen less of are better issues, because they've got more room to give new material.
Okay.
But if it's predominantly just, here's more or less what we've seen before on the TV series, I will be disappointed. It's a missed opportunity for them.
This was just a sample issue for me, and that's where it's going to stay.
I can totally understand that, yeah. So I, shortly before we recorded this, got my shipment today. We've had not so great weather up here in Texas lately, so it went through Dallas and apparently had a really long weekend there. So I don't have a whole lot of other things I've had time to dig out of the box and go through. Was there great stuff this week?
Great. There was some good stuff, you know.
Okay.
I actually enjoyed the third issue of They're Not Like Us. I had almost convinced myself to drop the book after issue one, and then you had almost convinced me to drop it after you read issue two before me. And I read it anyway, and I thought, it's not bad, but it wasn't great. But it's starting to kind of hook me, I think. And still not guns blazing, but it actually is hooking me a little bit. I'm actually a little more interested in the story, much more than I was after reading issue one. So for whatever that's worth, that lukewarm review, it's pretty good.
It's getting better. That's encouraging.
Yeah, it's getting better.
I don't think it was bad. It was just a little slow, and I felt with the second issue, they had set expectations at the end of the first that they didn't even address really there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious where that series goes and kind of how it gets received just in general by the comic reading audience.
Yeah.
Does it stick around? Does it not?
We finished the first story arc for Low, Rick Remender and Greg Ticini's Image book, Underwater Adventure. And it finished really, really strongly. There'll be a great trade coming out that collects those issues together. They're going to take a bit of a hiatus and come back, I think, in the summer with with issue 7 or something like that. So a little bit of a break. And it was a really satisfying first story arc, and a lot of ground was covered.
Cool.
And so if you didn't try that, there should be a nice, reasonably priced trade that comes out that you should definitely check that out, because it was really solid. Wicked and Divine issue 8 came out and was really good.
Not surprising there.
Continues to be a very good comic, and they that little announcement in the back, they're bringing back Phonogram for a third volume. That team is, so the artist is going to take a break from this book, and they're going to have guest artists come in and fill in on Wicked and the Divine, so he can concentrate on the Phonogram issues that they'll be doing for that third volume.
Interesting decision. That implies Wicked and Divine's going to go for the long haul, potentially.
Yeah, so it's going to stick around, and it's not going to take a hiatus or anything and lose a lot of momentum, so that's encouraging. I'm anxious to see. He had a list of some of the artists that were slated, I think, and so I'm anxious to see their interpretation of this book, because it's McKelvey, and I really like his style.
I love his style. Have you read Phonogram, the two volumes?
I have them sitting here, and I haven't done it yet, no.
The first one was black and white, and the art was good, but the second one was in color, and the art was much better. I think McKelvey really grew as an artist in the intervening time. And I am not a hardcore music aficionado or whatever, and I think those miniseries really kind of are geared towards that audience, but I didn't find it off-putting either. And just some of the storytelling stuff they did in The Singles Club, the second one, where it all takes place on one night, and each issue is like a different person's evening at this same club, I thought was really cool and really well done. You know, they told essentially seven different stories with the same location, same characters, you know, intertwining and stuff. It was, you know, just from a storytelling challenge perspective, I thought it was a lot of fun. And it was just a really good bunch of stories. So having Phonogram come back, I'm definitely looking forward to that. That's good to know.
Yeah. If when you get your comics and you look at the DC slate and you think to yourself, there's just not enough Batman books. Well,
I think that so often right after there's just not enough Spider-Man books.
Yeah. So if that's how you feel, well, there's a new digital first from DC called Batman Arkham Knight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on a series of video games, or maybe the last video game in the trilogy.
I've heard the video games are brilliant.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about the video games. I haven't played them myself. This is another variation on little variation on Batman and the Joker, and it's well done and well presented, and it's going to do three installments per print installment. So in a couple of weeks there'll be a print collection collecting these first three digital installments, and I think it's worth checking out. I've read the first two digital installments and I thought they were pretty good.
Where do you put it compared to Injustice and some of the other digital first stuff based on video games that I've read?
I think it's below both Injustice and Fight for the Multiverse. I like both of them a little better, but this just started, and so I've spent a lot of issues with those other two series.
That's true. I think if I had asked that question or had to answer that question after only two digital installments worth of Injustice: Gods Among Us, I'd be, yeah, it's there.
Yeah, exactly. Who's the
writer?
Peter Tomasi.
Ah.
You know, from Batman and Robin. And the art is, in this first arc at least, is Victor Bogdanovich, who's doing the pencils.
All right.
So, yeah, good pedigree there. And then, based on your recommendation, I started but haven't finished the Gaslight series that we kind of saw that character in...
Gotham by Gaslight, that stuff.
Yeah, from a while ago. So I've kind of started reading that and like it. Cool. Very cool.
I have talked, traded emails with Mike Myers about doing a kind of a rundown of the multiverse. He's certainly willing to do it. We're trying to work on some scheduling stuff. I will say, based on the latest round of solicits, where they promise a single universe after Convergence, I'm like, well, what does that mean for the multiverse? So, little confused by all that. So depending on scheduling stuff, I may try to get that episode together, or I may say, you know, if they're not going to go with the multiverse, why should I? I haven't decided yet. But yeah, Mike's totally game for it, and I think he'd be the perfect person to do it with.
So you guys will be exploring the multiverse?
Just kind of the game plan, if we actually do it, is start with Earth Zero, work our way through. Obviously, a couple of them are pretty obvious where to go to, but recommended reading list, what it's based on, you know, because none of these...
Because that's what DC should have done.
Exactly. You know, but hey, I'm a team player here. I'll pick up their slack.
That'd be great.
You're
the director's commentary for reading the Morrison line.
Pretty much. That's almost it exactly. But I need to do a little research first, because there are a couple that, you know, I put together what they had in the handbook. I looked up in Wikipedia, and there's still a few. It's like, you know, I got to go through all the Elseworlds and find out what some of these inspired which worlds, stuff like that. Because in a lot of cases, I don't think the Elseworlds as written actually happen in the worlds as presented in the handbook.
Yeah.
But certainly there was an inspirational aspect to it. You know, the Gotham by Gaslight, a couple of different Elseworlds and stuff, certainly inspired that world. Probably could have happened that way, but in a few other cases, nah, no, not really. You know, so we'll see. It's, multiverses are popular these days. Again, you know, Marvel with the Spider-Verse and Secret Wars going whole hog there too. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Okay. I think that'll do it for me then.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Swamp Thing number 40 from DC. All-new Hawkeye number 1 from Marvel, and Descender number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.